welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to, if you're hearing these lovely voices, you know football is near, Luke. It is the month of August. The Gophers have a game in approximately 4 weeks, and that means for the next 3-4 months, guess who gets to hear these dulcet tones every week, if not bi-weekly? That's you, the lucky listener. I don't even know how to feel about that right now.
It's wild. I think we've kind of made it, right? We're coming out of the non-football slash, I guess you can call it some affectionately call it the sports abyss, right? So we're coming out of that period. There'll be a real football in this month. Real football games, pretend NFL games are going to be played soon. We pretty much follow the same narrative we followed the last couple of years, right? Big Ten Media Day. Maybe some sort of interesting article written about the head football coach and the fact that he might be a little bit different than others. And, you know, we just continue on. So,
yeah, for those of you wanting reaction to that,
we don't have to talk about it. I just happened to see a tweet about it just recently. So
exactly. What I was going to say is I'm not going to really give it much more attention. I just don't believe, from everything I've heard behind the scenes, I was there at Big Ten Media Days. I just don't think there's a lot of juice to it. If the argument to this piece is we had to work hard and PJ's weird, okay, yeah, PJ is weird. Cool. Like, just because he's weird doesn't mean he's a bad dude. Like, I just felt like the whole thing was in your favorite former Minnesota professor trying to get somebody. I know he peddled this story to over 10 different publications, and he finally got somebody to bite. We've already given it too much time, in my opinion, now.
All right, yeah. So, I mean, the goal here in August is that we try and give the listener content to get them ready for the football season, but almost more importantly, helping them get through the remaining lawn mowing sessions they have. The grass isn't going to be growing all that much longer. It's going to be dormant here in the not too distant future. So we're trying to help them out. And pretty typically we have a schedule in the off season in the fall camp period, I should say, that consists of an offensive preview, a defensive preview. We usually do kind of an over under or a guesstimate. And then, the last couple of years, we've had fun with Daniel House, and we've drafted, who we think are going to be the all Big Ten performers for the Gophers in the season. We'll do that again. This time, we'll do that live at Stubborn Herbs, the eve of the opening game, to support the chair trophy and the philanthropic efforts they have to support, the Children's Hospital here in Minnesota, as well as the, I think it's Team Jack Foundation for Nebraska. So we've got that to look forward to. So if you mark your calendars, come out to Stubborn Herbs and check it out. House is going to be there. It's going to be a good old time.
Yeah. August 30th, night before.
Yep.
I'll probably have a beverage or two as we're sitting there recording, telling them about how I am the reigning champion on all things now. Go for football. Prognostication related. Can't wait to rub it in Daniel House's face when I see him here on my birthday, I suppose, on August 5th at the open practice. So only other thing I would say is, if you're listening to this and you're starting to get that itch for Gopher football again, we got 75% off an annual subscription right now at Gopher Illustrated through, I think, Thursday night, and then it's going to flip to 50% through the weekend. So the media is going to get to be at 3 practices here, including the one on Saturday. And if you want notes, photos, interviews, I don't even know what else you could possibly want from that, but you want to see how the team's doing and you don't have time to make it, you're going to save a lot of money doing this. So check out GopherIllustrated.com and join today.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. So we typically start with offense. We'll do that today. I think it's important, Ryan, to kind of do a real quick recap of where we were and where we're going, because on the offensive side of the ball, there's going to be some noticeable change. So let's highlight a few of those changes. One, Kirk Shiraka, no longer the offensive coordinator here in Minnesota. He's moved on to Rutgers. Additionally, Tanner Morgan winning his quarterback in Gopher history. He's moved on to the NFL. He's finally used all of his eligibility. Mo Ibrahim, everything running back, the bell cow for this program the last few years, outside of, the injury riddled season. He is off to the NFL playing with the Detroit Lions right now. And additionally, I mean, you can fit in a number of people along that offensive line, including John Michael Schmidt, who's now in New York, playing for the Giants, but just a number of offensive weapons have moved on. And anything else that I missed that we really should highlight, because as we talk, we're going to be talking about a lot of the changes that are coming here for the offense for the Gophers.
I think you highlighted it pretty well. I mean, I've got all my fall camp previews for the offense by the time you listen to this live on Gopher Illustrated. So if you want to read those, you can do that. But I think to Luke's point, I mean, it's what does an offense look like without Kirk Ciarrocca, Tanner Morgan, Mo Ibrahim? I mean, three brand new starters on the offensive line. I've spent a lot of time thinking about that, more than I probably should, and asking people that would know what it in theory is going to look like. So I'm hoping to have at least some answers about, as the offense continues to evolve and change here with their strengths and weaknesses kind of revolving or flip-flopping, I should say. It's going to look a little bit different for those of you who check in for the first time on August 31st when the Corn Cobs come to town.
All right, so let's maybe start in what would normally be kind of a unique place, and talk about, really what's back this season, and then we'll get to what's new. I think the thing to me, Ryan, that just jumps out is the fact that Brevin Spanford is back. This is a guy that is a Minnesota native from the St. Cloud area. He went to St. Cloud Tech High School. He's in year six. I mean, he very well could have gone in the NFL draft, likely would have been picked, but he elected to come back to the University of Minnesota for his super senior-ish season. And, he's getting a lot of national pub, right? And, if you look at the tight end position, it is pretty young behind him. I know Nick Kallerup's in year five, but in general, Brevin coming back was a huge boost to this offense.
Yeah, it was. I mean, if you're going to ask me to wax poetically about Brevin Spanford for one last time, I suppose I
can. There's a reason we led with this, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a guy who caught the most amount of passes a Gopher tight end has since Matt Spaeth did in 2006, and I looked it up. Now, if my University of Minnesota education is correct, a.k.a. Tartan High School as well, if Brevin just catches 40 balls this season, he is going to be number one all time in Gopher football history for tight end catches, and he would pass, I believe, Matt Spaeth doing that. So not only does he have a chance to go out, obviously, with a really good senior season, become a top 100 draft pick like he is likely to do if he stays healthy for the next 13 games, and he's going to break records doing it. And that's right. Got to spend some time with him at Big Ten Media Days. Got to ask him about that shoulder injury that he played through. He told me about how he injured it against Northwestern, essentially a labrum type of situation. And then he talked with PJ, talked with the trainers. They knew they had Iowa next week, and Brevin flat out just said, "I wasn't missing that game." And so he said that he and Fleck agreed to circle back at the end of the season. It's about when he would be getting surgery. And then Brevin decided that he wanted to play in the bowl game to help Mo get the record. And then he had surgery in January. He's been fully cleared here for a number of months now off that labrum tear, so he should be ready to go. I don't know what the over-unders are going to be for Brevin Spanford catches. I would think if probably his line last season is probably a good line, somewhere around 42.5. I'm the wrong person to ask and taking the over, but that's what I would take. So I just think that this offense, especially as it kind of shifts from the run game in 2022 to now they know their strengths are in the passing game, I think Brevin is going to have a heck of a senior season.
Yeah, and you've waxed poetically, like you said, about him for a number of years. We kind of saw it come to fruition absolutely last year, and this year, I think everybody's kind of on the hype train, whether it be nationally or even locally here, right, that he's back. And just talk quickly maybe, Ryan, about, what they have behind him at tight end, because I do expect, he'll be a big focal part of the offense, but a number of these guys are going to get reps at tight end as well.
Yeah, but I mean, you're still going to see Nick Kallerup, who's going to be going into his fifth year, the Wyzetta former walk-on, played a lot for Minnesota last year, kind of in that Co-Keefe role. And then the guy I'm more so curious to see how they try to fold him into the offense, because I think he's going to have a much bigger role in 2024, is Jameson Gears, where he's now in his third year in the program. They've tried to work him in some the first 2 years, but now he's in year three. He's got more of that grown man strength after a couple of years with Dan Nickel. And it's going to be, Brevin played a ton of snaps last fall. I think I looked it up via Pro Football Focus, and he played something crazy like 700 snaps, which would be the most on offense by someone not named the quarterback or the offensive line. And I think the staff is cognizant of that, and they kind of want to save the bullets, more or less. I'm not telling you he's going to go from 700 snaps to 300, but what if he's somewhere around 550, 575? Where do those snaps go without him? Now, they could just put more receivers on the field, but I also get the gist that they want to work in Jameson Gears more to kind of get his feet wet, to kind of propel him into 2024, where he becomes more of the feature target in this offense with So I think those two are going to be guys you see, especially if something happens to Brevin in terms of there's an injury. I think Jameson Gears is immediately thrust into a much bigger role. But guys like Nathan Jones, Pierce Walsh, Sam Peters, I think are very much destined for special teams in terms of roles, if that, because I think they're just going to lean on those first three guys.
All right, so let's move to wide receiver. And so obviously have some stalwarts back. Chris Ottman Bell coming off the injury of last season. He had a real good start to the season before he had the knee injury last year. Daniel Jackson sort of had a breakout season last year for them. And then they've kind of filled in, Ryan, with some transfers, as well as, I mean, we all know about Lamecki Brockington coming into year three as well. But, you know, tell us about some of the new guys and what we can expect to see out of wide receivers, and how deep are we really going to go?
Well, gone are the days of Michael Brown Stevens in the slot. He's now at the University of South Florida. Dalen Wright is now at TCU, even though I thought I just read that he's still not enrolled there, which if you've
How does that work?
To this podcast, well, if you've listened to this podcast or you've read Gopher Illustrated, you know I was a little bit skeptical about him just being able to leave and be immediately eligible with him already using the one-time transfer. Yeah. So we'll see how that all continues to go here throughout the rest of the month. But to your point, they do have two guys that are going to get a lot of snaps more than likely coming back, and Daniel Jackson and Chris Ottman Bell. And I feel bad every time. I swear, every time I talk about Chris Ottman Bell now, I just say, like, let's temper expectations, and I feel bad saying that because I just don't know truly what to expect for a guy in year seven that's coming off a complete meniscus tear, complete ACL, MCL. He's about 95% of the way back. Again, just talked to him and PJ Fleck here in the last week at Big Ten Media Days. The expectation for him is to be cleared here very soon for contact. But the question is, and I'm going to use my worst Aaron Gleeman analogy, is think of a car, Luke, with a 20-gallon gas tank. Well, if something happens to that car and they, you know, have to come back from something, what is Chris Ottman Bell's gas tank at? Is he at 15 gallons now? Is he 17? Is he 19? I truly don't know. I just want to temper expectations, because as much as I'm trying to, you know, say that we'll see what Chris Ottman Bell can bring, I also think that Corey Crooms, Elijah Spencer, and Daniel Jackson are going to be really good in this offense. Again, Corey Crooms comes over from Western Michigan, two-time, I believe, All-MAC slot receiver, has been really good there. He's going to be an immediate upgrade for Minnesota from the slot there. And then Elijah Spencer, the pride of Charlotte, I mean, Conference USA 2021 Freshman of the Year, looked really good in the spring. So my point being, I don't even know what the expectation should be for Chris in that first game, because if he's not 100%, I can assure you throwing out a three wide receiver set of Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer on the outside, Corey Crooms in the slot, and then Brevin Span forward, you've got four very viable pass catchers there. I mean, I haven't even talked about Daniel Jackson, who I am the most bullish in the entire room on. I think this kid is going to be a stud. You saw it at the end of the year in the Wisconsin game against Syracuse. Let me just say this. The drumbeat from the people I talk to around the Gopher football staff is very, very loud that Daniel Jackson is going to be a very good player very, very soon. You saw the flashes at the end of the year, but if he can put together that consistently through 13 games, I mean, that's going to be really good. And we haven't even talked about guys like the hero of the Wisconsin game, Lamecki Brockington, going into his third year. What is Kristen Hoskins see in his second year in the slot? I still think both of those guys are likely a year away. But if we're talking about short term, I mean, if something happens to one of the guys on the outside with an injury, Lamecki Brockington can immediately slide in there. If Corey Crooms goes through some injuries, Kristen Hoskins can slide in there as well. So this is as deep of a wide receiver room as I think PJ Fleck has had. I've asked Matt Simon, the receiver coach, about that. I've asked head coach PJ Fleck about that. They both agree with that statement. They may not have the top-end talent of 2019 where you had Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman, but you can I can honestly say you can go 1 through 6 with Crooms, Jackson, Ottman Bell, Spencer, Brockington, and Kristen Hoskins, and I feel pretty good about that. So it's going to be how does Minnesota find snaps for those, you know, those guys on the outside of Daniel Jackson, and Elijah Spencer, and Chris Ottman Bell? Because if Ottman Bell is truly, say, even 90% of what he was, that's still a quality Big Ten receiver who's probably the best 50-50 ball catch winner they have, not named Elijah Spencer. So it's going to be how does Matt Simon try to figure out all these things? It's a great problem to have, and I hope they all stay healthy. But we'll see how everybody's health continues to evolve here throughout fall camp.
Yeah, it's really amazing the evolution of this wide receiver room and the kind of conversation that we're having now versus what we were having maybe even 6 months ago, right? You know, there seems to be, you know, obviously the influx of talent with the transfers. Daniel Jackson takes that step, obviously, to get Ottman Bell back. Lamecki Brockington, additionally, you know, seemed to have a little bit more of a breakout as the season went on. You know, before we were struggling to be like, how are guys going to get open? Like they're going to have to scheme this. Like they can't find separation, et cetera.
They can't get open. They can't catch the ball.
Exactly.
They can't create separation.
Like, yeah.
These are all things that I'm bullish on the receiver room in comparison to the last couple of years.
Yes,
where
for sure.
We've spent a lot of time as you just got done rehashing about, they weren't good. They haven't been good the last couple of years. And essentially I wouldn't even argue since probably 2019, they haven't been good there. They should be good here. There is no excuse for them to not be good here. And I think Matt Simon knows that. I think the other co-offensive coordinator, Greg Harbaugh, knows that. And it's going to come down to how do we find all these guys' snaps? Because I do think, like, just in general about the passing game, Luke, like, if you have 4 weeks in a given year, I could viably say, I think 1 week Brevin leads you in catches. Another week Daniel Jackson leads you in catches. Another week Corey Crooms. Another week Ottman Bell or Spencer. You don't have just one alpha. I don't even know that they have an alpha. I think Brevin is the closest thing they have to that, but it becomes your plan Bs or your second read in all of these plays are much more viable than they have been largely since 2019. And it's going to be on Harbaugh and Ethan to try and make sure everybody gets their mouths fed here.
Yeah. And we're going to have to talk a little bit about scheme and how that's going to change. We'll probably do that here after a break. But I mean, the reality is like you feel a lot better about this room. You feel a lot better about pass catchers in general, one because of who came in, but also who stayed, right? That's the thing that kind of sticks out to me. And I'm very curious in the early non-conference games to see how these guys show out, you know, in this new scheme and under these new two co-offensive coordinators.
Well, it's going to be, you got to be ready to go from the word go. You
get
Nebraska at home, you got to travel to Chapel Hill, and even Eastern Michigan and Louisiana are two teams that, yes, they're not Power Five, but they're two teams that were in bowl games last fall. This isn't the 2022 opening schedule of Jerry Kill's New Mexico State team, another really bad Colorado team, and another one. I mean, this is going to be this passing game, which has been, we talked about at length on this podcast. It needs to be ready to go from the word go on August 31st.
Gopher Gridiron Radio is brought to you by Homefield. Ryan, we've worked with Homefield a couple of times. They're here for the whole 2023 season. I'm sitting here in my basement. I have a hooded sweatshirt on. Let me tell you why. It's kind of cold down here. But also this hooded sweatshirt from Homefield is incredibly, incredibly comfortable.
Oh my gosh. They're some of the nicest material. And I think the thing to me that really sells it is these are very niche t-shirts. Now, all you have to do is go to homefieldapparel.com, find the Minnesota. And I think all of you know there's certain games this year where you need to be wearing maroon, gold, whatever it may be. But they're all, these are also very one-of-a-kind t-shirts. These aren't t-shirts that you're going to find at Goldie's Locker Room. These are t-shirts that you're going to go through, and I can guarantee that you, your wife, your husband, whoever it may be, are going to find something and say, yeah, that, I mean, that looks really cool. And the quality of the shirts are great. They're very unique, and there's something to wear. I have worn these home field shirts out in public, and I've had people stop me and say, where'd you get that? That's really cool. I said homefieldapparel.com. So, Luke, if people want to save 15% off their first order, what do they have to do?
They are going to use the code GG23, as in Gopher Gridiron 23. GG23 will save you 15% on your first home field apparel purchase. Note, yeah, we want you to get Gopher apparel, but also keep in mind, they have a plethora of other schools that they've licensed gear from. Check it out, homefieldapparel.com. All right, Ryan, let's talk a little bit about the philosophical change before we get into, or the presumed, let's go, philosophical change, before we get into, you know, quarterback, running back, offensive line, et cetera. We talked about the pass catchers already. We focused on that early because I think we all know, and they've stated they got to be able to throw the ball more. One is because they have Ethan Calliak-Manis. Two, you know, they've got an influx of receivers and targets and people that can win in space and who they think can win and get open. But the other reality is that we have two new co-offensive coordinators in Matt Simon and Greg Harbaugh. But Ryan, in the end, you got to convince me, man. PJ Fleck still leads this thing. I'm not expecting him to throw the ball, you know, 65 or 75% of the game, but I'm really still questioning. Part of me is just concerned that we're not going to see them throw it above the 50% mark. Tell me what you think and how you can even maybe predict this.
Well, here's what I would say is a balanced offense is not 50-50 run pass.
That's fair.
Daniel House would tell you that. I'd tell you that. PJ Fleck would tell you that. But what I would say is they have the ammunition in terms of the skill position players to throw more than they ever have. I'm projecting them to throw more than they ever have in a PJ Fleck offense, whether that's Western Michigan or Minnesota. But I feel like people hear that and think, well, Luke, you just said they're not going to throw the ball a ton, and Ryan's out here saying they're going to throw the ball more than any other year in the Fleck era.
Yeah,
I am saying that, but I think people forget how little Minnesota has truly thrown the ball. We've talked about in this podcast about how it's been them in the service academies. They've only thrown the ball on average somewhere on like 20 or 21 times a game. Well, what if they bump that up to 26 to 28 to sometimes 30 times a game? And that's in positive game scripts, because the way I see it is, Ethan is going to be the straw that stirs the drink of this offense, and he's got the talent around him. We just spent a lot of time talking about that to do that. And where I have the questions now, or a tailback, and on the offensive line, how do they replace three starters in the interior up front? How do they continue to figure out what life after Mo Ibrahim looks like? Because I feel like, you know, you have Sean Tyler for 15 to 18 touches, and we'll get to that later. You have Bryce Williams on third down, and then what? So it's going to be, you know, the thing to me that stood out in terms of, if you want to believe, Luke, I asked PJ at Big Ten Media Days about the passing game and about just explosive plays in general. And he made the comment to me, and I don't have it verbatim, so I'll paraphrase, that they know that they need to be more explosive this year offensively than any other year so far at Minnesota. Now, why is that? As Fleck would say, it's because they're going to go against Michigan, Ohio State, North Carolina. Fleck is well aware that if you're going to be able to win games this year, you better be explosive to counter a lot of these talented offenses that the Gophers are going to face. So how do the explosive plays likely come? Probably in the passing game. Now, can Sean Tyler house one? Absolutely. But I have gotten the impression all offseason, and trust me, I've said a lot of times, you know, I hear what you say, but I trust what you do. Well, I hear PJ Fleck say they know they need to be more explosive. I talk to people behind the scenes within the offense designing it and saying, we know we need to be more explosive. So now they got to actually figure out a way to do it, because you have the talent to do so and you have the quarterback that can push the ball down the field.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people will look at the stats and see, you know, outside of the Wisconsin game, Ethan maybe wasn't terribly explosive. He didn't have gaudy stats, et cetera. But in one thing is, I mean, that's in part why you got to watch the games. You know, in the Wisconsin game, we really saw a concerted effort to try and, you know, take more risk, try and manufacture explosive plays or just have it come naturally within the offense. I mean, the winning touchdown with Willamecki Brockington was a 45-yard pass from Ethan and Kalyk Banis, you know, that sealed the deal, right? In the end, I'm glad that you cited and acknowledged that Flex says they need to have more explosive plays, because in part, that's where they struggled, because you had to be so perfect. And in the end, I think the Iowa game is a great microcosm of the challenge of how perfect you have to be. Minnesota won that game in every facet other than probably the scoreboard and turnovers, right? And frankly, the turnovers kind of ended up doing them in, even though they were able to run the ball really effectively against a really, really incredibly good Iowa defense. Iowa also got jabbed out of a touchdown, but I digress. In the end, getting and having players that can generate explosive plays is going to help you lead towards that balanced offense. And I'm hopeful that we can see that. It's not going to be without bumps, Ryan, but I do think that the blueprint is there. And we saw that kind of what they probably want to do in that Wisconsin game last year.
100%. I mean, I think you saw the realization from the staff that if they were going to win the Wisconsin game, they had to do something different than what happened a couple of weeks previously against Iowa, or it might have been the week before. I forget how the schedule played out, in terms of they had to take the handcuffs off of the kid. If they were going to win that game, it wasn't going to be because they were going to be able to run the ball against Nick Herbig and Keanu Benton. It was going to be because they were going to take Wisconsin by surprise through the air. And we saw guys make plays like Dalen Wright and Daniel Jackson, Lamecki Brockington, but Ethan also extend plays with his legs and be able to just find ways to find Brevin on key third downs. And that's where it's got to be this fall. I mean, we'll get to it when you get to quarterback, but to your point, there are absolutely without question going to be bumps in the road with Ethan Kalyk Manis in his first year as the starter. I'm expecting that, and all of you should expect that. There's going to be great games and there's going to be poor games, but it's going to be in those poor games, Luke, the thing I want to find out, when, say, Minnesota's down 14-3 at the end of the first quarter, Fleck can't retreat into his shell, go risk-averse the rest of the game, because you were going to ride or die offensively with Ethan Kalyk Manis, and you got to let the kid learn.
All right, so I think that's a good transition for us. Let's talk about Ethan. He's in year three now. I think technically he is a redshirt sophomore this season. I don't think there's any question that he's the starter. You also have Cole Kramer back in year five. Interested to see what kind of role he played. I know in the spring he looked pretty good, Ryan, and we've seen him play a lot of that wildcat quarterback historically. But I mean, this is kind of Ethan's. This is Ethan's team, and everybody's kind of on board. With that, I think that's pretty clear. I don't think there's really a quarterback competition, even no matter what they say in the media, right? But yeah, just tell us. I mean, you highlighted already the fact that, you know, he is really a dual threat option. His running is something that can be a real net benefit for this offense, and especially in extending plays. But you know, the arm talent is very much a plus as well.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I'm echoing a lot of the same things you just said in terms of, I don't know, I haven't heard Flex say it here, whether it was at his internal press conference or whether at Big Ten Media Days, in terms of there's a competition at quarterback. There's not. Stop. I'm sorry if Cole Kramer's family members are listening to this. It's Ethan's team. I mean, he's clearly QB1, as he should be. But that's where I will just continue to say, I want to be the high man in the room on Ethan Kalyk Manis, because I think I found it pretty fascinating here in the offseason talking to national media, other Big Ten media, that when they look at what their expectations are for Ethan, they're incredibly, incredibly low. And I get it, because they look at the overall stats, which 54% completion percentage, 3 touchdowns, 4 picks. I get it. If you look at the entire sample size of work, it's it's not impressive. It really isn't. But I think if you kind of look at it, and again, we're taking apart a small sample as much as they are, but the last six quarters, when the kid, when they let him cook, he was able to make that thing pretty hot. And that's where I think this offense is going to be pretty fun this fall with him at the helm. Now, I will continue to also say, be ready for the highs and lows, because you knew what you were getting with Tanner Morgan. It was a very, very high floor. Now, Ethan has a higher ceiling, but I also think people have to realize, like in that scenario I laid out earlier, there are going to be, there's probably going to be a game this fall where Minnesota is down 14-3 because of two Ethan turnovers.
Sure.
It's in his first year as a starter. Minnesota plays some really, really good defenses, you know, this fall with people like Iowa, Michigan, Illinois. I got a lot of respect for there as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some very talented defenses on the schedule, and he's a first-year quarterback, and I'm sure the defensive coordinators are going to do everything they can to change the picture from pre-snap to post-snap to when he's got to throw the ball. That's what I would do to a first-year, true first-year starter. But I would say this. I mean, the kid's got some arm talent, and I will continue to say I think he has the best shot of any quarterback I've covered in my now 12 years to end the Tony Dungy streak that Minnesota hasn't had a quarterback drafted since the 1960s. Now, I'm not telling you it's going to happen after this season. It won't.
Yeah.
But the hope would be that from game one to game 13 this fall, you see Ethan get better from where he starts to where he ends. And it won't be linear because it's just not the way things work in the real world. But I would also say this. The thing that I've kind of gleaned from his teammates and from other people behind the scenes is we spent a lot of time, I think, last fall talking about, or at least PJ did, Ethan's preparations. And that's where PJ wasn't happy with the way he was on the sidelines or the way he was preparing. And I don't know if it's worth anything, but I would say this. I mean, there's been a lot of talk internally, externally in the last 3-4 months after spring ball that Ethan now gets it. He's putting on, I'm not saying he wasn't putting in a lot of time before, but he understands the level of maturity that PJ is demanding of him and the expectation that is trying to be set for him, especially following in the shoes of Tanner Morgan and all kind of the stability he provided here. But I think Fleck also said it pretty well when he said, this is going to be my third quarterback in 11 years of coaching that, you know, we've put a ton of time, effort, and energy into.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you how much they really love the kid. But it's going to be, I mean, how quickly can Ethan figure this thing out is going to be the biggest storyline for this offense to me.
Yeah. And if people want to get a sense of, you know, what kind of person Ethan Calliope-Manis is, in episode 287 of this podcast, go back in our feed. We actually talked with him directly, thanks to the Dinkytown Athletes members that made that available for us. He was a really good interview. You really kind of get to know about him, the person, as well as some of what he went through from like an injury perspective, you know, what it was like, you know, following in Tanner Morgan's footsteps as Tanner was dealing with injuries, etc. It's I think it's great to be able to hear from these athletes directly. So do go check out that episode. It is a really good conversation. Don't want you to miss out on that if you haven't had a chance to listen to it.
Yeah, he's a very thoughtful kid.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he's someone that puts a lot of thought into what he says. Again, I feel like people are going to be mad that I keep calling him a kid. I mean, he's still a kid. He's going into his third year of college. Now he's got a lot of growing up to do. He's grown up a lot, but it's going to be how quickly can he grow up. And I would also say, I hope to see that Cole Kramer continued that hot streak he was on in spring into the fall, because you are always going to need a second quarterback in college football. How many times have we seen Minnesota face the backup quarterback over the last 2-3 years?
Yeah.
It feels like over 50% of the time almost, yeah, Luke.
Right.
And yeah. So that's where if Cole Kramer could continue to develop as a passer, which I'll say again, Greg Harbaugh and Eric Kaler and Keegan O'Hara deserve a lot of credit. And so does Cole for the amount of floor that was raised from Cole with just him in the passing game. I mean, he's got the arm now to make all three level throws. I think he understands what a Greg Harbaugh and Matt Simon offense looks like. But I think as important as Ethan is, I think having a viable quarterback who isn't just a wildcat quarterback anymore, which is what people essentially remember Cole Kramer as, I think is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good distinction. I think your point about the fact that it's very rare that that a QB1, you know, goes wire to wire, right? We saw that last year with Tanner Morgan getting injured on a couple different occasions.
Think about Tanner Morgan's tenure. I mean, yeah. I think the most underappreciated ability of Tanner Morgan is the most important ability to me in football, and that's availability.
Yep.
Or durability, whatever you want to call it. He was always seemingly, I mean, he played in probably 90% of the games. And that's very tough to do. I just said, like, there's been some very talented players that have come through this university that just weren't able to stay healthy. And I'm not saying that's going to be Ethan. I'm not. And we're talking about a high ankle sprain, and then he dealt with, like, a broken collarbone in high school. Like, the book is still yet to be written on Ethan Calliope-Manis. But I really appreciate players that can stay healthy. But it, as important within that statement is, Cole Kramer needs to continue to develop here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's transition and talk a little bit about running back before we get to your favorite, the offensive line. Obviously, replacing Mo is not something that's really possible in terms of like production, workload, etc. I think everyone was maybe a little bit surprised when they went out and got a transfer in Sean Tyler, knowing that they had Zach Evans, Bryce Williams, even Darius Taylor, in their running back room. Let's talk about this because it's going to be different. And additionally, like Mo Ibrahim's not there, nor is Kenny Burns. Kenny Burns has moved on as well. He's a head coach at Kent State, if memory serves. Oh,
Golden Flashes, baby.
Golden Flashes, there we go. This running back room is going to look different. In some ways, it's going to be interesting to see what their approach is to running the ball with this diverse set of skills that you have in these number of contributing running backs.
It doesn't surprise me at all that once Kenny Burns left for Kent State and once Darius Taylor signed on the dotted line, that when Sean Tyler hadn't signed yet with Oklahoma State, that Minnesota went after him the way that they did. I mean, we're talking about a guy who ran for over 1,000 yards the last two seasons at Western Michigan, averaged 6.5 yards per carry in the MAC. If that doesn't tell you about how explosive he is, I mean, I think he could arguably be the most explosive running back in the Fleck era, because once he gets to that second level, you're not going to be able to catch him on the third. I mean, he's got great deep speed. It's why he's got 3 return touchdowns. But the thing I think people got to wrap their minds around is this is truly, I think, going to be a committee backfield. This isn't going to be Mo Ibrahim gets 35 carries, Trey Potts gets 4, Bryce Williams gets 4. This is going to be that Sean Tyler has only run he's only got 3 carries. I'm screwing this up, Luke. He's got 20 carries in only 3 games in his college career. That means he's averaging somewhere around, I believe it's like 15 to 18 touches per game, which is a good number for him.
Yeah.
But it's going to be, if we're still talking about a running game, that if, say, you run 65 plays in a game, which I think is around average offensively, say you throw the ball 30 times, it's still 35 plays offensively that are going to be run. So if Sean Tyler is only going to get 15 to 18 of those, you're still talking about another 15 to 18 that you have to account for. And that's going to be, the way it's been put to me, nothing has been decided beyond that.
Yeah.
In terms of, is it going to be Bryce Williams? Can he expand in year 6 on anything other than his third down role? Can Zach Evans in his second year stay healthy throughout an entire session? That would be fall camp. Can he stay healthy throughout an entire fall camp where you've seen the flashes in the spring game that this kid is very talented, but it's going to be, can he stay healthy? I think that's my biggest question with Zach Evans, because I know he's talented. And then I do truly believe that Darius Taylor is a true freshman, can absolutely help this football team.
Right.
But it's going to be with him as well. He was a little bit banged up in the spring. It's going to be, because they're going to try and find out with new running back coach Nick McKissick-Luke, who is the guy that we can also trust, because Sean Tyler is very much an east-west back. We've talked about that for years with guys like Trey Potts, guys like, say, Rodney Smith. I mean, Sean Tyler kind of falls into that mold. So who's going to be your Mo Ibrahim, Shannon Brooks type, where they're north-south? Well, I would argue any of the three backs could do that. I think that's more their play style, but there's just so much that I think has to be determined here. Is Bryce Williams is going to get every chance, as is Zach Evans or Darius Taylor, to earn 15 to 18 touches in this backfield yet. And I think if you asked anyone over there right now, as we record this in early August, they don't know. And that's where that's going to be, that second week of August, that third week of August, is to have a scrimmage or two. It's going to be which one of these guys can prove that when the lights are on and the bullets are flying, that they can have the game slow down and then they can be a compliment to Sean Tyler.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see, Ryan, you know, Mo didn't get integrated into the pass game a ton. And, you know, maybe since Rodney Smith, we really haven't had a running back. I'm trying to think off the top of my head here, even if when Rodney Smith was here, if he was involved a lot in the passing game. But I'm curious to see how the difference between Kirk Ciarrocca and Harbo and Simon might change that and how they might get running backs more involved.
Well, you know, one of the funny thing is, I know people like hearing about like the random side bets I make with other media members. One of the ones I made with Daniel House is, I think he bet me the over on like, it's like something crazy, like 30 running back, or it might have been 30 or 40 running back catches. Now, Luke, think about over the years, how many total catches running backs have had?
Gosh, it's, I mean, it in the Fleck era, it's not
30 or 40
many.
In the first 6 years
of
the Fleck era. So when I heard House wanted to put that as a line, I was like, yep, okay, sounds good, great, yep, book it. Now, to your point, though, I do believe that, you know, they're going to try to use the running backs a little bit more in the passing game. Now, my expectations for that aren't exponentially high, but who's to say you can't use the screen game more? Who's to say you can't throw some flare passes out to Sean Tyler in space? Different things like that. Because I do think, especially with someone like Sean Tyler, he's not someone you really want to run between the tackles. Now you can, but where he excels is trying to get out in space.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, the home run ability, right? We've seen that in special teams from him, et cetera, but it'll be interesting to see. And I'm going to track that side bet. Somehow we're going to have to keep.
I got to get like all my side bets. Like I even made some with Mike Grimm and Daryl Thompson when I was in Indy.
I need to see. We need to have your side bets tracked. I will take.
I got to think I got like something crazy, like a 70% hit rate.
I want to see your side bets. I will take responsibility in tracking.
If you want to make one with me, I'm sure we'll make one over the course of the next few podcasts.
Yeah,
I just don't know what you have a strong opinion on one way or another.
Yeah, well, I'll think about that. I'll try to find a flaming hot take for you to bite on. All right,
you know, I like it a little bit spicy. Yeah, so I just think running back is just it's. I mean, we're saving the last two positions that I have the most question marks about in my mind, and I think the staff's mind is Sean Tyler, and then what? Is it Sean Tyler, Bryce Williams on third down, and then Darius Taylor getting another 10 to 15 touches to spell Sean Tyler? Could be. Mm-hmm. Could also replace Zach Evans there. Maybe Bryce Williams. Like I said, I mean, all three of these guys are going to have every opportunity in the world over the course of the next, 20 days, let's say, before they start the game prep for Nebraska to prove that they should be the guy getting meaningful carries here in September.
Yeah, and Ryan, we really leave kind of the best for last in that there's a lot to follow here with this offensive line. You have guys back. You have, you know, Ariante Ursary back. You have Nathan Bow back. You have Quinn Carroll back. Martez Lewis back. But not all of these guys had like significant roles, but did, I shouldn't say that. Some had very significant roles. But, you know, this isn't somebody that started for, you know, 4 years or three years, probably in the case of,
Connor Olson, Blazing.
Connor Olson's
like we've been spoiled.
Exactly.
In terms of, at least I have, covering an offensive line that it feels like had been around forever. Guys like I said, John Michael Schmitz, Connor Olson, Blaze Andrews, Daniel Faalele. It's not the way it is on this offensive line in 2023 because you've got Ariante in his second year as a starter.
Yep.
You've got Quinn Carroll likely sliding inside to right guard for his second year as a starter. But then positions like left guard, center, and right tackle, you're going to be breaking in a first-year starter somewhere or another. Now, I think there's an important distinction between first-year starter and how old they are because, if we're talking about an offensive line where I look across everybody's year four in the program or older. That's where I can't wait for 5 years from now where I can just say redshirt sophomore, redshirt junior, and everybody knows approximately how old they are.
Yeah.
But because of COVID, it just eligibility is still so weird. So that's where it's year three or year four and above for every starter, at least that I have projected along the offensive line. And that's where it's going to be. How does Brian Callahan figure it out? Because I could probably viably tell you 8 or 9 names that I could see starting. Wouldn't shock me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the only two things set in stone along this offensive line, and I'd argue a third is probably written and very tough to erase pen ink. And that's where Ariante is going to start at left. Quinn Carroll is going to start somewhere on the right side of the line. I would say there's a 90% chance that's right guard. It's where he worked the entire spring. And then I would say written in that very hard to erase ink at center is Nathan Bowe.
Mm-hmm.
The comments that PJ has made publicly and other players have, it seems like that Nathan Bowe in his 6th year for the product from Lakeville there is going to get his shot at center. So that means what happens at left guard and what happens at right tackle? Because the reason I'm not completely closing the door on Quinn Carroll back to tackle is Martez Lewis or JJ Gaudet need to seize this opportunity.
Or stay healthy.
Well, there's just no more excuses for either one of them because, right. I mean, I've seen this story play out. We saw it play out in last fall camp where it was it going to be Quinn Carroll at right tackle? Was it going to be Martez Lewis, JJ Gaudet? Quinn obviously won out. Well, Quinn's not going to – I mean, Quinn's going to be playing right next to you, but it's clear that the best position for Quinn Carroll moving forward short-term and long-term for him is on the inside. That's where his strengths are going to be. So Martez Lewis in his 4th year, JJ Gaudet in his 5th year, and even Fleck brought it up at the press conference that Gaudet needs to stay healthy consistently. One of those guys need to take this thing and run with it. Because if they don't, I almost think that Brian Callahan is just going to say, well, Quinn, we don't want to do this, but we think the best 5 involves you playing tackle and maybe sliding in Martez Lewis to guard. I have no idea. But I just want to see Martez Lewis or JJ Gaudet sees that thing at right tackle and then at left guard. It's are you going to go old or are you going to go young? And what I mean by that is Carter Shaw, the Utah State transfer that they took about 3-4 years ago now, who played very early in his time at Utah State, transferred with one of Luke's favorite former offensive coordinators, Mike Sanford. Things you didn't think you were going to hear today. Mike Sanford's name on this podcast, but he came with Minnesota. Hasn't really played. But now he's in year 6 in the program. It's in his final year. Can he be the guy at left guard? Is it going to be someone from St. Croix Falls and Tyler Cooper in his 5th year? And that's where Fleck talked about with the media here just a couple of days ago when talking about Tyler Cooper. He said, I talked to Tyler, and he's got to put his foot on the gas, and he's got to keep it there. I think in an ideal world for them, Tyler Cooper is the guy that emerges there. He's bigger than Carter Shaw. I think he's pretty athletic, pretty strong. But the guy I'm not ruling out at left guard is Greg Johnson. Now, do I want to see a year 1 true freshman playing in the Big Ten in year 7? I don't. I think it kind of speaks to the kind of the options at left guard. If Carter Shaw and Tyler Cooper either get banged up, they don't seize this thing. But I also would say this. I think Greg Johnson is the most physically impressive offensive lineman Minnesota's had as a true freshman since Daniel Faalele. I know some on Gopher Illustrated tried to kind of make the comp to Curtis Dunlap, who also played guard. I just look at Greg Johnson and I look at Curtis Dunlap and think they are very different bodies. I mean, I think everybody here knows kind of Curtis Dunlap and probably 350, 70, maybe 380 pounds. I don't remember what he was actually during his time here. That's not Greg. I mean, Greg is 300, 310 pounds, probably somewhere around there. Very athletic. This is going to be a guy I would be absolutely gobsmacked if he wasn't a multi-year starter at Minnesota. I just think this kid is going to be really good, and I think he's especially coming in January, giving himself a shot to start at left guard potentially in fall camp. And I would say this, you know, the people I've talked with around the program aren't ruling that out. I mean, if there's 2 true freshmen that are going to seize a role somehow on offense, it's going to be Greg Johnson and it's going to be Darius Taylor. But it just comes down to, Luke, I've mentioned all these names. I mean, like I said, there's 8 or 9 names that wouldn't shock me. I kind of know the order they're probably going to go in, but this is once again, I mean, some of these guys like Martez Lewis, JJ Gaudet, Tyler Cooper, Carter Shaw,
you've been waiting for a long time for this opportunity. You've been waiting for, you know, XYZ player to graduate. Well, they graduated now. You're now 21, 22, 23 years old. There's no better time like the present, but it's going to be which one of these guys really sees the opportunity here in fall camp.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, like, this is one of the biggest question marks. And this is really a luxury from the previous seasons because you had so much coming back. You know, the experience of a Connor Olsen or a Blaze Andrews, like you alluded to earlier. I don't think we're trying to paint a picture of doom and gloom per se, as you got, as you stated, many of these guys are older, but it's just the unknown at this juncture, right?
Yeah, like all of them are of the legal drinking age,
right?
It's just there's going to be 2 second-year starters and there's going to be 3 first-year starters. That's just the way it's going to go. Now they're old, but they're inexperienced, mm-hmm. So it's going to be, you don't have to play, you're not forced to play, I would say, 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-olds in the Big Ten, like we saw in the Jerry Kill years, like we saw in the early PJ Fleck years. You're at a point in the program now where you have guys that are all 21 and old, and that's great. But it's going to be, how quickly can these guys figure out it's time to actually go do it now?
Yep.
Because I do think, like, I think Mo Ibrahim, you know, probably masked some of the things that the offensive line did at times. Well, you don't have a tailback like that, that is just an all-world type of
tackle breaker
player. I mean, I think highly of Sean Tyler. I do.
Yeah.
But it's not Mo Ibrahim. I mean, I think it's Mo Ibrahim. I've talked about this before. It should be on, you know, the Mount Rushmore of Gopher running backs with Darryl Thompson, Lawrence Maroney, Marion Barber. I think it's those four. It's just, can this offensive line figure it out in pass protection? That's probably my number one question mark about the entire offense, is if they can't pass protect and Ethan mm-hmm. starts to get some of that David Carr with the Houston Texans to him, that's going to be no bueno. But I would imagine that, you know, maybe the Minnesota tries to move the pocket a little bit more with Ethan being more mobile behind him. So it's going to be, how do all of these different forces, different bodies, mm-hmm. because I don't want to be where they were in 2019, I think. Would you remember when they were rotating guys
yes.
from series to series? I want nothing to do with that. Yeah. Nothing. I hate rotating. Like, you know, we've seen it throughout college football with different quarterbacks. You know, this guy gets this quarter, this guy gets this series. If you have 2 quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. If you have 2 right guards, you got no right guards. Just pick a guy, mm-hmm. stick with him, give him an adequate sample size, which, say, if you know you're guaranteed 12 games, give him three games. If he's up to snuff, great. If he's not, move mm-hmm. to the next guy for 3 games. Give yourself an adequate opportunity to not have all these moving pieces along the offensive line, because you've already got enough going on there. But I think if Minnesota's offense is really good this year, Brian Callahan needs to be making a lot more money than he is, because there's just a lot of things that got to gel and click up front.
I like how we haven't even gotten to, like, game week yet, and you're already complaining about assistant compensation. Indirectly.
Callahan would tell you that he's making like $600,000 now, so I think he's doing well.
Yeah.
That's like one of the – I'll say this, Luke. It's one of the running jokes that I'll let the people in on is, you know, I like to kind of razz some of these coaching staff members, because I obviously know how much they all make. They're all public.
Yeah.
It's all public record. And they absolutely hate when I do that, because then they're like, well, I'm not like that. You know, what does it matter? Why does it always matter to you what I make? Like, hey, I'm on your side here. I'm just trying to get, you know, and it's just, they hate when you refer to them as, you know, say Mr. 600K, like someone like Brian Callahan.
Sure. Okay. Maybe to wrap up here, any kind of parting thoughts? I mean, we've gone through the ideological changes we expect to see. Even so, you know, we didn't get into the schematics of how we expect that to look. I imagine we're not going to see that until the Nebraska game. Yeah,
I can't. That's one of the things I can't talk about. It's why the media is allowed to practice.
Right.
Have I seen changes in practice schematically, different things they're doing? 100%. Do I wish I could talk about them? 200%. But that's just not the way it goes. If you go to a Gopher football practice here, I think the 2 open ones are going to be this Saturday, August 5th at 7 p.m. at the stadium. It's also a diaper drive.
Yep.
And you all can bring an oar if you want on the oar wall. And there's going to be another one, I believe, on Tuesday, August 15th, 3:30 at the Gopher Football Practice Complex. You're more than welcome to come see kind of what this offense and the changes that it's trying to undergo is that now that they're in fall camp, they got to figure out what plays are their strengths, what plays are their weaknesses, what's Ethan's strengths versus what Tanner was, what's Daniel Jackson's strengths versus what Dalen Wright's were. There's just a lot of things being kind of tried out to see, because like I said, I mean, they're going to go against the viable defenses, but I think the parting thought I would say is this is going to be a much different offense. Mm-hmm. This is going to be an offense that throws the ball 25, 27, 30 times a game. They know it. I know it. Fleck knows it. They have to be. This isn't the Mo Ibrahim offense of 2022. That's not where their strengths lie. Their strengths lie with number eight. Their strengths lie with Brevin Spanford, Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, Corey Crooms, Chris Ottman-Bell, Lamecki Brockington. And it's going to be, can the running game with a new a new tailback there, a new running back coach, and three new starters on an offensive line kind of find a way to gel this thing together where Minnesota can be very viable in some very important games.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially in the early games, it's going to be fun to see and track the changes that we see, both schematically and just kind of the risk tolerance that they have. We know that Ethan's a very confident individual. We are going to see some turnovers. As you said, there are going to be instances where it's going to be maybe a little bit rocky, but I do think that there will be more explosive plays, which will be fun in its own right.
Like if I told you that, say, Ethan's line at the end of the year was something like 61% completion percentage, 20 touchdowns and 11, 12 interceptions, would you take it?
I think I would. Because you didn't even
I feel like there's a ceiling there. I think just in general, I would say, I think touchdowns are fluky, whether it's running, passing, but I do think Minnesota is going to lean more on the pass in the red zone and the green zone this year. But I do think my expectations are with those double digit interceptions, I do think he's going to turn the ball over some. Like mm-hmm. I said, he has to learn what throws he can make, what throws he can get away with, and what throws he can't. And the only way you do that is face live bullets against defenses like Michigan and Iowa and Illinois, and we'll see what Wisconsin's got defensively, obviously. So just know that there's going to be some ups, there's going to be some downs, but it's all going to revolve around him.
And you know, the thing that you omitted there is it's going to be interesting to see how what kind of impact he has in the running game as well, right? We know that he can extend plays and keep them alive with his feet. But we also saw in that Penn State game, for instance, when he started in that whiteout, what an asset his legs can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, he is obviously athletic. I'm not saying I expect to see Ethan run the ball eight times a game.
Yeah.
But I do think it would be reasonable enough to see him scramble quite a bit. I'd love to see him on the read option take it twice a game. If you want to say Ryan, he should absolutely take it five. I don't disagree with you. I really don't. But let's be realistic with our expectations here.
Yep.
If he hits two a game and he catches an end off, you know, that's too busy peeking in the backfield, great. He's probably going to get 16 yards on two carries, probably get a first down or two in it, and he's going to put himself in a situation to where, whether it is Greg Harbaugh, whether it is Matt Simon calling the plays, I'll continue to say I lean towards Greg Harbaugh calling the plays, but Fleck isn't going to reveal that choice until after the Nebraska game because he doesn't want to give the Cornhuskers anything to kind of look at. But again, that's just me speculating. You will see if I'm right or not after that Nebraska game, but it's going to be whoever is calling the plays, say it's Matt Simon, that play sheet, like, you know, Luke, gets a lot longer if you're always consistently in second and third and short.
Yep.
You know what the best third down play is? The one that never happens. And that means you have to be efficient on early downs. And that's where hopefully Ethan's athletic abilities can help keep this offense on track.
All right. So want to thank everybody for listening. Again, we'll be back with a defensive episode here soon. Again, join us August 30th at Stubborn Herbs to raise some money for the Chair Trophy and the great causes that they support. You know, check out homefieldapparel.com. Use the code GG23 to save 15% on your very first order from there. You're going to need some swag for some of these games, in particular the ones that are gold, maroon, or gold and maroon. So make sure you check that out. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.